All right, welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game, the podcast. Hi, Mikey.
Hi, Lily.
So, Mike, a lot of our listeners and supporters often say to us on Twitter, on your blog, on Instagram, do this thing, do that thing. Do
right.
One of the many tweets that we get is, do the Mormon Church.
Right. I know. And fortunately today, we have someone to help us with that task. I recently appeared on his long-running and very popular podcast, Mormon Stories, and we're now welcoming him to our podcast. But he's not just a podcaster, he's also a nonprofit CEO, activist, public speaker, and religious transitions coach. He advocates for the rights of skeptics in Mormonism, LGBTQ rights, equality for women, and other individual views outside of mainstream Mormonism. He has a master's degree in instructional technology and a PhD in clinical and counseling psychology. So, Lee, he is much smarter than we are, and perhaps he can teach us some stuff today. Hello and welcome to Dr. John Dallin, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Leah. It is such an honor. I'm a huge fan of you guys. You guys have had a huge influence on my people, as I like to say, and I can talk to you about that, but I'm just so delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. We would like to know, because we do have a lot of people ask us. Now, you are, I would say, the Mike Rinder of the Mormon Church, right? I mean, I think you do the work that we're doing for Scientology.
I would say, in the sense that maybe I'm the most high profile critic of the church in 2021. I think that's true. I don't think I was as high up in the church as Mike was. That's maybe an important difference. I was never kind of the right hand man of the leader of the church. So that's an important difference.
But you were, and by the way, I do work against words like critic.
Because me too.
I think it's an unfair label when you are an advocate for victims and you are exposing damaging doctrine, hurtful, abusive doctrine. I think you have a right to call yourself an advocate.
Thank you. I like to be a truth teller, educator. Maybe I've been conditioned a little too much to call myself a critic. I like that. Thank you, Leah. That's a good
it's
tip.
It's like calling ourselves apostates.
Right? Correct. Yeah. Yes. So, or religious bigots.
Right.
it's what they want us labeled as rather than what we really are.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
So John, take us through your story for those who don't know.
Okay, sure. Thank you. So I'm a sixth generation Mormon, which means that my ancestors joined the church during the church's founding. The Mormon Church was founded in 1830 in upstate New York. My ancestors go back to the very first years of the church. They crossed the plains as pioneers. Mormons are very proud of their pioneer ancestry. And I'm a sixth generation Mormon. So I was born and raised in the church. And did all the things, including attended church actively throughout my life, early years, served a two-year mission for my church in Guatemala, went to Brigham Young University or BYU in Provo, Utah, got married in the temple to my wife, had four kids, had a successful kind of technology career at Microsoft and at MIT. And then I had a faith crisis around age 30 or 31, and I'm 51 now, so that was about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And, at this time, the internet was just starting to come on the scenes. I was at Microsoft at the time.
Yeah.
And it was the most earth-shattering, depressing experience of my entire life. I suffered serious depression for 3 or 4 years while I was doing really well at Microsoft and had a really young family. And it became so troubling and disturbing for me. And once I realized that I was not alone, that there were thousands and tens of thousands of other people who were struggling as much or more than I was within Mormonism, I resigned from my position at Microsoft, moved to Utah, and I started Mormon Stories Podcast a year later. And so I've been podcasting for the past 16 years with Mormon Stories Podcast. And I'll just say that I ended up talking to so many people along the way once I started the podcast, tens of thousands of Mormons who were in deep pain, deep suffering, that I got a PhD along the way in clinical and counseling psychology. So, I've been doing this for 16 years.
Well, John, but so what was it?
What kind of made me lose my faith?
Yeah.
So, when I, in the church, Mormons are often given what are called callings, which is like a job in the church. Okay. And it, when I was at Microsoft, I got this calling of being what's called an early morning seminary teacher, which means that I showed up at 6 a.m. Each morning during a weekday, and I was a religious educator to the high school students there in my local congregation. So I would teach Book of Mormon or teach Bible or teach Mormon doctrine to high school students in Seattle. And I wanted to be the best teacher I could be, and I'd never— oddly enough, I was 31 years old and had never really dug deeply into my church's history. I had served a two-year mission. I had done 4 years of college religious education, 4 years of high school seminary, 3 years of Sunday church. And in all those decades, I had never actually studied deeply my own church's history. So I started buying books and reading about my church's history, and I discovered all sorts of things that were super troubling that I had never been taught as a Mormon. Things like that Joseph Smith was a charlatan before he started Mormonism. He engaged in fraudulent, illegal behaviors. He engaged in folk magic, treasure digging with a peepstone and a hat, and he would lead people to these treasure sites and tell them that there was buried treasure, and they would pay him, and then every time somehow the treasure would magically disappear, you know, right at the end of the treasure dig. And he ended up, being charged with illegal fraud for this. I didn't know this growing up. No one taught me this. I didn't know that Joseph Smith had had over 30 wives, that many of these women had been married to other men at the time he married them, that he would sometimes send a man on a mission to a foreign country and then proposition that man's wife while the man was sent on a mission, that he would marry girls as young as 14, 16 years old. He would marry mother-daughter pairs, sister pairs. None of this, and he was sexually active with many of them, according to their own testimony. None of this was ever taught to me in my multiple decades in the church. And then I think something really big, Mormons rely on some scripture in addition to the Bible. So we have what's called the Book of Mormon and the Book of Abraham and the Doctrine and Covenants. And we're taught that those books are sacred scripture that Joseph Smith translated from ancient documents. In the Book of Mormon's case, we're taught that Native Americans, you know, a couple thousand years ago, wrote down their history, that history was saved on golden plates, and then Joseph Smith translated those golden plates into English, and that's what the Book of Mormon is, a record of ancient Native Americans. But I had never studied the Book of Mormon in depth to learn that there are all sorts of super troubling, kind of deal-killing anachronisms in the Book of Mormon. And that's a term that your listeners may not understand. But yeah, Basically, let's say that someone produced a document supposedly from Abraham Lincoln that said, I, Abraham Lincoln, was wanting to talk to my wife, Mary Todd, and so I pulled out my iPhone and gave her a phone call. You would know that letter was a fraud or a forgery just by that one anachronism.
Sure.
And the Book of Mormon has like 100 deal-killing anachronisms in it that show it as, interestingly, and this is a tie to Scientology, that show the Book of Mormon as a work of fiction that Joseph Smith produced in the 19th century. So Joseph, that's one of the similarities between Mormonism and Scientology, is our religions were founded by fiction writers.
Right.
And I had never thought of the Book of Mormon as a work of fiction. And once I discovered that, along with the Book of Abraham, were works of fiction, not translated ancient scripture, it just, the house of cards just all came falling down. And here I am, married, 4 kids, given my whole life to the church, 10% of my income, my entire identity, my life was Mormon. I'd never tried alcohol. I'd never tried drugs. I was a virgin when I got married.
Right.
Everything was sort of like Mormonism. And then all of a sudden it all fell apart. And
so couldn't the argument be, John, that see where we differ here, right, is that Scientology, the actual teachings are poison, right? Like you could, if you become a Scientologist, right, you go, wait a minute. This is, we have what you're saying too, right? The foundation of it is a lie. L. Ron Hubbard lies about his war record, that he was a scientist, that he was, you know, all those, you find out. But the reaction to that, to Scientologists, are like, so what? Like, who cares? You know, the technology works. The technology is good, right? But when you're reading the technology of Scientology, it is bad, right? Whereas, what you're, could the argument be that what separating the man from the actual teachings, right? Because some people listening to this will be saying, well, that's not a bad thing that you were a virgin. I mean, it would be bad for me because it would mean that you don't maybe know how to, you know, you're not great in bed because you don't have a lot of experience. but that's just me. That's my preference.
Only on this podcast will you hear that analogous about.
No, I've had sex with one woman in my whole life.
Yeah, like I want to know, you know what the hell you're doing. Like, like you might not know, John. Today, still today, you might not know what the hell you're doing.
It's very possible. You have to ask my wife. You would have to ask my wife. Yeah.
Well, she's going to say you're great. She's your wife. That's what she's going to say. But my point is, couldn't one argue that these. What you actually were learning and teaching was decent, was good. I want to teach my daughter not to have sex. I don't want her to be promiscuous. I don't want her to do drugs. I don't want her to be carrying on drinking and acting like an asshole. And, I want these things for my daughter.
Absolutely. No, Leah, you bring up a really good point, and I think it's undeniable. Like, you could argue I hit the lottery being raised Mormon. Look, I've got multiple graduate degrees,
yeah.
Educated, you know, I make a decent living.
You see, you're a lovely man. I mean, you're lovely.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. No, but here's the problem is the problem is number one, the idea of informed consent. If it's true that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is God's one true church on the earth, and that if you follow all its rules, and then when you die, you go to heaven and you become a god, and then you get to rule over your own planets or universes, and all that's true, then number one, it doesn't matter whether the church is healthy or not. You're doing what God wants you to do, right. And ultimately you'll get rewarded for it.
Right.
The problem, number one, is with informed consent, because if that's not true, so if you join the church, or if you get baptized into the church, or if you're raised in the church under those pretenses of the church being true, and it's not true,
right.
And then let's just say we add to that that maybe what if this is the actual only life that we're sure we're ever going to get?
Right.
That makes the time on this earth, your time on this earth, and your money and your resources and your reputation
valuable.
Extremely, it's everything.
Yes.
You know, Benjamin Franklin said, time is the stuff life is made of. And if you end up spending all of your time, making all of your decisions, spending all this money, giving your life to something that is not what it claimed to be, then that is fundamentally fraudulent. Mm-hmm. And even if you're, you know, live till you're 100 and are healthy and never get cancer and have a great posterity, but you lived someone else's lie,
right?
Then that's at its core dishonest. And I think there's a lot of people that would rather live to the age of 60, living an authentic, meaningful, fulfilling life than live to 100 living someone else's lie. And I think, right. I think that's number one answer to your question, Leah. There probably is a second answer too. And that's that sometimes high demand religions are deadly.
Yes.
And so when you think about the, how many LGBTQ Mormon youth have ended their lives by suicide, how many divorces have happened when a well-intentioned Mormon lost their faith and so their spouse divorced them and took the kids, how many families were broken apart, how much money was, extorted. when you think about the harm, how much racism was taught, how much sexism was taught, how many young people, young girls were taught that they're inferior to men or they don't have the potential as men. Right. When you think about all the ways that a high demand religion can and does harm people, then you have to balance the good. And the good is usually for the white straight men. I mean, that's in Mormonism, that's who really benefits, the white straight, you know, cisgender men.
Right.
And the people who suffer are the people of color who are taught that their skin is dark and loathsome because they sinned in a prior life, or women who are taught they're inferior, or LGBTQ people that are taught that they're broken and defective and that the only way that they can become whole is by dying. And so they die sometimes by their own hand. Then it becomes a lot more problematic.
Right. And that, and I think that is the part that maybe we don't know about, right? Because, you know, we often, and I'm sure you get this too, going, well, why, you know, was there anything good about Scientology? You know, you guys were successful. You lived a good life. You know, Leah, you are on TV series, like now all of a sudden, you know, but when you start talking about the everyday practices, for example, what you're talking about with women, right? So teaching women that they're inferior, to accept abuse from their spouse, you know, all of these things are very, very dangerous to be teaching young women, to be, you know, shaming people for what they were born to be, to a point where they feel their only out is to commit suicide. These are things that, you know, we're not talking about, right? Like no one's really highlighting that, as far as this is not a faith where you could go in. You know, my father was Catholic. My father was a horrible, racist, bigoted, abusive human being. And he would go to, you know, church on Christmas Eve, mainly because his wife forced him to go. But, you know, priests were not standing there going, "Hey, George, where you been?" every day, right? These are what we're talking about when we're talking about the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons, and Scientology. We're talking about a high devotion, like it is your whole life. You're not just allowed to go when you feel like it, make mistakes in life, not shame yourself, not thinking you're going to die, not having your parents telling you you're doomed, there's no point. You know, you've already screwed yourself for eternity. You know, all of that is I don't even know another word for it. I mean, if I had to compare it, I don't know the word for it. When people say, well, it's like any other religion. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
I don't know what word, how do we define this as its own category?
It's high demand is the perfect terminology for this. And I know that sounds kind of weak and sort of wimpy words, but it's actually true. The demand on a Scientologist, a Mormon, a Jehovah's Witness is just as you say, Leah. It is imposed by the hierarchy or the organization and the group of people which you are part of. The expectation is that you are a good Scientologist, a good Jehovah's Witness, a good Mormon, or suffer the consequences. And those consequences are pretty, pretty serious. They're not minor consequences like, oh, you're going to have to say four Hail Marys.
Right.
These are consequences of life, like John was saying. You may end up being divorced. You lose your family. You lose
your whole community. Everything. Yes.
And this is the stuff which makes these organizations different and why they sort of get categorized together. And, you know, it's funny, when you were talking, John, and explaining this concept of giving your time and your life and the to a lie, that is a perspective I actually never had about this. And I think we talked about it when I was on your podcast. You know, my idea of Mormons is that they're generally pretty nice people. They're like, they have great communities. They look after one another. They're, you know, healthy living, sort of ideal family people, blah, 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 blah. And that is the image that that I guess the Mormon Church has spent a long time
crafting
yes. and generating to yes. to make everybody understand that. Because just as you say, similar with Scientology, there are not only lies and anachronisms, the whole thing is founded on fundamental untruths
right.
of Hubbard's research and, you know, the 75 million year ago volcanoes that never existed and et cetera, et cetera. And when you look at it from the perspective of you are devoting yourself and causing other people to devote themselves to something which is not in fact true, that's a pretty terrible indictment. And I just found it fascinating that you presented it that way, because I've never thought about it like that before, ever.
Right. Yeah.
I just never have.
And the other distinction I think is important is when you leave.
Yes.
Right, John? Like,
yeah.
So you separate, right? You start to say, okay, I cannot subscribe to this. I don't want to raise my family this way. I don't want my daughters to be raised this way. I want my daughters to be independent. I want them to be know that they're powerful or more powerful, and they could live a life yeah. the way they want to live. Listen, you know, I'm kind of joking about not wanting my daughter to ever drink alcohol. You know, that ship has sailed, by the way. And by the way, my reaction to it was like I was devastated. devastated, you know, and but you know, we do want our children to make mistakes. We do need to teach our children unconditional yeah. love, and that your parents and your family are always going to love you. No one's perfect. No one's ever going to be perfect. We, as your parents, are, you know, fucking you up as we speak. That is part of our jobs. Sorry, I don't know if you probably don't like cursing. Even though you're no longer a Mormon, I'm sure you still are like that decent guy who doesn't like this potty mouth.
No. My kids are teaching me to swear. My kids are slowly teaching me to swear.
In the right direction, John.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Next is beer. Swearing now. I've done swearing a little bit. I've done some coffee, and soon. Someday I'm going to try beer. Part of what's confusing about Mormonism is it's not just a carefully crafted image on the part of the church. Mormons are fundamentally nice and kind. If you have cancer, they'll bring you casseroles. If your wife is pregnant, they'll take care of your kids. And for the most part, the Mormon people are good, kind, loving, hardworking, generous, peaceful people. And so that's not a lie. That's not a deception. That's
true.
But John,
I have a problem with subscribing to this idea, right? That there is a nice person, right? Yeah. Here's a nice person bringing you a casserole,
right?
But thinks that people of color are, I don't know how you put it.
Mormons are taught that skin color, dark skin color, is a curse from God. The Book of Mormon teaches that, and Mormons are taught that.
Kind of like putting those two concepts together, right? That you would be a good person, but have these as your core beliefs.
Right. And so there's an insidiousness to kindness. And I've actually thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
I've wanted to actually, after reading your memoir, Leah, yeah, I thought about a title for a memoir of mine called Nice Cult.
Right.
Because Scientology seems a little bit more harsh and mean-spirited, or maybe a lot more, but there is an insidiousness to niceness.
Yes.
And let me explain why. You know, I was listening to your guys' podcast, and you talked about, you know, Scientology being super wealthy. You know, they've got a couple billion, they're worth a couple billion dollars. Well, Mormons would say, you know, Scientologists hold our beer or our root beer. You know, the Mormon church is worth hundreds of billions of dollars, right?
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Right now, just our investments in cash, stocks, bonds, you know, there's an investment arm of the Mormon Church called Ensign Peak. And this information just came out in the past couple of years.
Okay.
Just the investments in Ensign Peak are over $120 billion. And that's not counting the church's actual assets. That's just the investments that the church makes. And so the Mormon Church, by some estimates, is three times wealthier than the Catholic Church. And that's, you know, that's saying something.
Now,
people are going to have to test, you know, kind of vet that information, because I don't know how transparent the Catholic Church is. But the Mormon Church is almost richer than God. And so when you think about how much money and power the church has, it's partly because they're not as mean and vicious as Scientology. And so there's kind of this sweet spot between differentiation and assimilation. You don't want to be too different than the host society, or the host society attacks you and kills you. You don't want to be too assimilated, or you're kind of a Lutheran or Presbyterian, or you're kind of just like everybody else. Right. But if you can find that sweet spot of different enough, demanding enough, then you can be fabulously wealthy, have multiple U.S. senators, have multiple members of the House of Representatives. You can have a member of your church become the Republican, you know, nominee for president. And that's if you're nice enough. So if you, so I often talk about the difference between Scientology. Yes, no, we don't put people in cages. We don't incarcerate people. No, the wife of our leader is not missing. No, we don't beat people, right? But if you look about the total number of families destroyed, the total number of LGBT suicides, the total number of people kicked out of the church, the total number of sexual predators who were protected, the total number of sexual abuse victims that were marginalized or not believed. You know, if you look at the total amount of money that's been taken from people under not true pretenses, the amount of time people have dedicated to something that wasn't what they thought it was. When you add that in aggregate, you could make a case that the Mormon Church does way more harm than the Church of Scientology, and they do it as super nice, well-intended, sincere, believing people. And that's what makes it so disorienting, because I don't want to look like somebody that's going to say the Mormon Church is all bad, Mormons are all bad people. And that's what's so hard, is Mormons are nice people, they're good people, they're honest people, and in many ways they're kind. But then sometimes that kindness, like when I was excommunicated from the church, they're basically saying, we're going to cut you and your wife and your children off, not just in this life, but from God for eternity. And they do that with a smile while they say, I love you, and then twist the knife in your back and then cut you and your whole family off from your surrounding community, from the friendships, and then your family members ostracize you. Like, that's vicious, but it's done with a smile and with an I love you. And so it's very disorienting for Mormons, because we're not like Scientology, but in some ways that makes it harder. There's a quote I once heard, and I'll shut up.
No, please.
It's from a song called The Advertising Man by an artist called David Wilcox. And it goes, a crack will kill you quickly. That's why it's got to go. They'll get more of your money if they kill you nice and slow. And it's basically talking about how cigarettes are better than crack.
Sure.
Because cigarettes kill you more slowly.
Yes.
And crack kills you quickly.
Right.
And that's what makes it disorienting. And that's why I say, you know, we belong in the same category as you guys, even if we're very different. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. And I want to ask you, do you have similar, it sounds like you have similar policies as far as, you know, the shunning and the shutting off of a whole community to you and family.
And again, everything in Mormonism is a little bit softer. So hard shunning does exist in Mormonism, but it's more rare. What we have is more soft shunning, which is like, you know, you could be taken off your parents' inheritance. You could be taken out of a chat group that your family has. You could be not invited to certain family events. There can be new groups created where your family talks about you behind your back. You could be, you know,
John, that's horrible.
No, or your or your brothers or sisters won't let their kids play with your kids.
That's horrible.
Right, but it's not like Jehovah's Witnesses or Scientologists where you can't ever talk to them again. Does that make sense? So there is a difference. It's just softer, but it's, in some ways it's more painful. Maybe in some ways a clean break is more healthy than a toxic, connected, superficial. And not all Mormons are like that. There are some Mormons that can love their family members who have left. And to be honest, the church is being forced to become more accepting of the people who have lost their faith or have left the church, because if they don't, they're going to lose everybody. So,
yeah. So in that way, it is different because it, you know, Scientology is just not having it. They'll say, write your mother right now and tell you can't talk to her.
No, we're not that. We're not like that. We're not. We're nicer in that way, right? We're nicer in that way. We are.
There's another important distinction too. Scientology cannot change.
Right.
One thing the Mormons have done over time is change and adjust their practices and principles in accordance with what society says is acceptable.
Absolutely. We're taught that God never changes and that our church doctrine is God's, you know, doctrine.
Yes.
But we got rid of polygamy, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when we were forced to. We used to ban black people from full participation. We finally ended that in 1978. There are changes that the church makes. Right now, the church is trying to change everything, but it's only because the internet has forced the church into a corner.
Whatever produces the change. Whereas Mike is saying, there's in Scientology, L. Ron, everything is based on policy. There's no assimilating information. Right. What exactly does it say? That's exactly what you do. If L. Ron Hubbard's policy says this is how you clean a window, that's exactly the measurements you need to do. And the same with, you know, the fair game policy, and you know, this is and there's policy that says policy of mine will never change. Mm. And it is a violation of policy to alter policy of mine that I've written. So it will just never change. The only thing that's going to change it is government intervention, is the IRS revoking their tax exemption so that they don't have as much power to destroy people's lives as they do now. It's also a business. It's run as a business. I don't know how the Mormon church is run. I think you mentioned you pay 10%, would be, you know, a tithing, but in Scientology, they actually have an actual price list for every service that you do. And the price goes higher as you get up this gradual bridge.
No, Leah, all we ask is 10% of your income for Leah. That's it. 10% of your income for life. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah. It's very simple. Very simple. No, but our church is very slow to change. Let's be clear. It's very slow to change.
Yeah.
But I feel sad for you guys in that sense, because what we are capable of change, it's just very painful. There's a lot of collateral damage. You know, there are a lot of deaths and destroyed families and smeared and destroyed people along the way. But we are changing, but it's just at a snail's pace.
Yeah, I welcome it. You know, any organization that's willing to look at itself and say, look, we're hurting people, we're destroying families. This is not what God should represent. This is not what faith should represent. You know, although, like you said, slow, but at least some change. I understand. Listen, I thought the Catholic Church was going to change their stance, and, you know, they just made up, you know, they're not changing. And I thought that we had kind of a progressive, you know, Pope coming on, but it turns out,
Let's just be clear.
Yeah.
Women are not allowed to hold, the same types of leadership positions as men. Our entire, you know, top level hierarchy are all pretty much all white males. Mm-hmm. Women aren't allowed to be in leadership positions. There's no theology for gay or lesbian or transgender person within Mormonism. Yeah. There's just no plan for them. All the racist teachings are still there. Mormons are still taught that dark skin is a curse from God. So, I mean, let's just be clear. We've got a long, 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 long way to go.
And in this case, the only thing that can change it is the people. To walk away and say, you know, I can't subscribe to this. You know, I have a daughter, I have a son who, you know, and I can't do it. You know, I just can't be part of it until that's really what will change it. But it's funny that nobody really questions, right? You're talking about, the infiltration of politics, right? No one's asking these questions of those that they're they're voting for. No one's saying, well, and we have the similar problem with Scientology. You know, you have journalists and entertainment reporters not asking celebrity Scientologists about the true beliefs because, you know, they get away with, well, I don't want to attack their faith. Really? So their faith says that if you are molested as a child, it's your fault. And if you report it, you will be shunned and we will come after you and you will lose your whole family. This is considered a faith to you that you shouldn't ask people about?
Yeah, and we've got our own serious problems with cover-ups of sexual abuse. I mean, the whole Boy Scout, you know, the whole Boy Scout scandal of the Boy Scouts of America basically going bankrupt, you know, guess who was the largest, you know, guess who encompassed the largest block of Boy Scouts of America in the United States. Sure. It was the Mormon Church. And and we have had massive problems with sexual abuse and sexual abuse cover-ups. And
is that because there's teachings similar to Scientology it's and the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yeah. Well, it's different. It's more of a cultural and a legal practice. So we have a law firm called Curtin & McConkie. It's a very rich and powerful law firm in downtown Salt Lake City. And so for decades and decades and decades, there was a hotline that the church set up for bishops when somebody comes to confess sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And so they call Curtin McConkie back in Salt Lake City.
So John, so you're saying as a person who was born and raised in this, the teachings of it taught you, right? So you learn if something like this happens, you go to your bishop. And not to the authorities.
Yeah, Mormons are taught from a very young age that when you have a problem, you go to your bishop. So your bishop is the leader of your congregation. It's like a 300-person local congregation. And if your spouse is unfaithful to you, if you can't stop masturbating, if you look at porn, if there's some abuse, you go to your bishop. And so you go to your bishop, and then your bishop counsels you, helps you try to not be gay anymore. Your bishop helps you try to not masturbate anymore. Your bishop helps you not to have premarital sex, not to cheat on your spouse. And if you've been abused, the bishop would give you counsel so that the church would not be harmed and so that this matter could be settled quietly to minimize the financial, legal, or, you know, PR negative exposure to the church. And that's how the church has operated for a long, long time.
Yeah. So John, so when you're being raised in this, you subscribe to it just as we all subscribe to it, right? Who are, you know, raised in this kind of, how did you justify that? Because for us, it was something, right? So I don't know if it's the same for you guys where you thought, well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want, if somebody came to me and said, listen, committed this crime. I touched, you know, a young boy, a young girl. Did you look at it as because you were taught this, going to the authorities is bad. So I'm doing what I think is best for the soul.
You're two things you're taught. You're taught that the church is God's organization on the earth, and that the church is led by God, and that the last thing you ever want to do is harm the church. And the second thing is you're taught that your bishop speaks for God. So the Mormons are taught, there's this quote that's supposedly coming from God's mouth, whether by my own voice or by the voice of my servants, it is the same. And so Mormons are taught that their bishop is the your bishop as a local Mormon is the spokesperson for God. So you would want to go to your bishop, number one, because it's just like going to God. They know God's will for you. Mm-hmm. And then also you would never want to do anything to hurt the church. And so you can trust your bishop to take care of you. And that's how thousands and tens of thousands of abuse cases have been covered up over the years.
And so what do they do for the victim in the church?
So the church in Utah lobbies really hard because the church controls the legislature. And the church makes sure that in Utah, bishops are not mandatory reporters. And so in Utah, if a bishop – so the church does – Mormon Church does everything it can to make sure the bishops are not mandatory reporters so they don't have to report to police. And so then – and then in Utah, you go to the bishop and the bishop says, hey, let's handle this quietly. We'll take care of the brother. And sometimes there are blaming messages, you know, what were you wearing at the time? What were you doing? Were you saying you're doing anything suggestive? So absolutely those same types of questions can be advanced depending on the situation of abuse. But generally speaking, I wouldn't say in Mormonism an abuse victim is taught that it's their fault, but they're certainly taught that they has historically been taught not to go to the police, to keep this in the family, to right. never do anything to embarrass the church, and to this is the biggest thing, to forgive. So because we're a Christian, we call ourselves a Christian church, we believe in Jesus, there's this heavy emphasis on repentance and forgiveness. Right. And so it's like, hey, listen, abused person, you believe in Jesus, right? You believe that Jesus suffered and bled and died for all of our sins, right? You believe that Jesus can make everything whole, right? Okay. So yes, your abuser, violated the law and abused you, but Jesus suffered so that they can be forgiven. So if you don't forgive them, then you're acting contrary to Jesus's will. You really need, and so the pressure gets put on the victim to forgive and to forget and to move on. And that allows tens of thousands of perpetrators to escape unaffected. Right. From there, and for there to be repeat abuse. And there are a lot of instances where these abusers just do it again and again and move from congregation to congregation, just like with the Spotlight, movie in the Catholic Church.
Yes. So basically nothing is done to help the victim.
I mean, this is something that's really interesting. One of the things that I'm most proud of about the Mormon Church is that the ex-Mormons are badass. So if you look at the ex-Mormon, ex-religious communities on ex-Reddit, the ex-Mormon subreddit has almost 200,000 members. If you look at the ex-Mormon podcasting community, we have incredible podcasting support. If you look at, YouTube channels, like Mormons kick ass at social media, and ex-Mormons particularly kick ass. And so we, for the past 10 or 15 years, have been, I don't mean to be crude, I'm going to swear, in honor of you, Leah Remini, I'm going to swear.
God, I don't want to be the person who makes you curse.
This brings me much joy. This brings me much joy. Okay. To honor you, Leah Remini, by saying the following. Over the past 15 years, the ex-Mormon community has handed the church's Mormon church's ass to them in how they've handled the church's problems. So I'll just give you an example.
Did I miss the opportunity? Wait. So
did we miss the swearing?
Ass the swear word?
Oh my God, John, you're so cute. Oh. I can't.
Does that not count? Does ass not count as a swear word?
John, if I was in front of you, I'd be grabbing your face right now like a grandmother would be pinching your face. I would be taking those cheeks.
So ass doesn't count? Are you saying ass doesn't count?
You are the cutest thing ever on the planet. To think that I was literally bracing myself for something.
So was
and
I.
The fact that you said ass is the cutest thing on the planet. Sorry.
I'll try and do better, Leah. I will try and do better.
Okay.
So once upon a time, there was this Mormon bishop named Sam Young, who, just a few years ago decided that it was outrageous that sexual abuse victims were being punished or not believed. But most importantly, he was outraged that 12-year-old girls were sitting alone behind a closed door with a full-grown man being asked if they masturbate, being asked if they touch themselves, being asked if they touch where they same with young boys. Yeah. And so this bishop, came to me and he said, hey, John, what can we do about this? He started a petition. I helped support. A lot of other podcasters supported the petition. Then he started a social media campaign. Then he started marches in downtown Salt Lake City. He started an organization called Protect LDS Children. And before you know it, all of YouTube, all of Mormon podcast land, Reddit were just raining down on the church, super negative press about just inappropriate sexual interviews, about protection, protection of rape perpetrators, etc. And lo and behold, after a couple years of heat, the Mormon Church changed slowly a few of its policies around one-on-one interviews and around how they handle abuse. And so Mormons are intense, but ex-Mormons are also super intense. Yeah. And so that's how we're slowly changing. And honestly, I think Mormons should start consulting Jehovah's Witnesses, Scientologists, Orthodox Jews, Orthodox Muslims, not because we're trying to make money. I think we would all do it for free.
Sure.
But we, I think we, if there's one thing I can sort of like humble brag about, we have a lot to teach people about how to make your church change. And so I offer that in humility. And a shout out to Sam Young and all the other ex-Mormon social media people that have helped make such a big difference in our world.
And John, I think it's I do, you know, to a credit, even though you're saying it's slow, but it is a credit to the Mormon Church that they are willing to look at these things, and individual members can make changes. You don't need to teach your daughters that they should accept abuse. You don't need to teach your daughters that they shouldn't be reporting to the authorities anything that's, and sons, that should be allowed. It should be encouraged. It should be taught. You know, these things need to be, we need to teach our children. We are their parents, and we have to make that decision. We make that choice. I talk to my son and daughter about this. I decide and we need to teach our kids this. Yeah. We need to teach our kids this, and it's going to come from the pressure from the members. You want to be Mormon? Great, but you should put pressure on your church to get rid of these oppressive and abusive practices. Totally. Go ahead. Sorry, what were you going to say?
And I'm grateful that we're, you know, there's a saying in Mormonism that Mormons are glad for Scientologists because Scientologists make Mormons look less weird.
Yeah,
like I'm. We are grateful that we're not as bad as Scientologists. But the only thing that I would say, but again, there's the aggregate, you know, utilitarian argument that's problematic. But one of the things that we have in our favor is we're three times as old as you guys, and so we should be three times better.
Agreed.
Because we've been around three times as long, and it's still, you know, to talk about the baby steps of change that Mormonism has experienced. And by the way, just over the past 10 or 15 years, and just because of Google and social media, it would be a disservice to all the people that have been shunned, excommunicated, marginalized within the Mormon people to simply summarize it as, you know, good job, Mormon leaders for making changes. Because absolutely, I have to tell you, the Mormon church has been embarrassed, dragged, kicking and screaming with a lot of violence done to the people who have spoken out. The church has been excommunicating people for decades, and they're still doing it. If you speak out, if you criticize the church, if you speak out, you're excommunicated and often shunned.
I was going to say, and that. So, do they have a similar policy of Scientology of the fair game when you start speaking out? Do they?
Yeah,
come after
I've been
you?
I've been accused of, you know, I when I'm going on Mike's podcast, I'm like, I wonder what they've said about Mike, and it's like, you know, wife beater. You know, I've been accused of abusing women, of abusing children. I've been accused by these random, you know, anonymous people that make up these things with these, you know, websites where there's no evidence given. Like, yeah, you get fair gamed in Mormonism by a group of paid Mormon apologists. And it's not as bad as Scientology, but absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Scientology puts out their own websites. It says it right on the bottom, the Church of Scientology. So
our church does is it gets its wealthy members to donate to nonprofits that then donate money to have its critics smeared. So it's Mormonism smarter, basically.
Yes. And John, I want to make sure I made the point. I hope that I am not coming off as somebody who is saying the Mormon church is doing amazing. I mean, I don't think that. I don't, because I know the effects that disconnection has, shunning has, being shamed for who you are, losing family members to suicide. I don't want to, if I made that seem that way, I deeply apologize.
I don't want to let our leaders off the hook.
No, absolutely not.
That's all.
I'm not impartial.
I don't want to minimize the severity of the average life of a Scientologist, because I do think it's an order of magnitude worse than the average life of the average white middle class Mormon, I'd say.
Right. Now, what do you think?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you raised something else there, John, which I think, and Leah had touched upon this earlier. In my view, the difference between a cult and a real religion is what happens to you after you leave.
Yeah.
And this we have, you know, Leah and I have obviously experienced it with Scientology. We've experienced it from our friends who were formerly Jehovah's Witnesses. And now we hear the same thing from you about former, you know, excommunicated Mormons who get attacked and are shunned. And this doesn't happen in what I, you know,
Presbyterians, there's yeah.
real,
there's no
real religions Lutheran, don't yeah, do yeah, that.
Right. Episcopalian excommunications, you just don't, you don't see it. Right.
And
Reformed Jew, you know,
right.
Yeah, you just don't see it. Yeah.
Maybe the Hasids, but not the Reformed right. Jews, you know, and you sometimes it's difficult to isolate what it is that makes something good or not good. What's right. the sort of overwhelming, is this better or worse? And, you know, we had this little discussion about the Mormons and the family and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But when you get down to the fact that when you leave or when they kick you out, they go after you, or they try and destroy or try or have policies that in effect destroy your life. Mm-hmm. That to me is yeah. where the line gets drawn very clearly in the sand of those organizations that must be brought to or held to account and changed.
Well, yeah. And I just want to add something in the middle, because yeah. there absolutely is the excommunication and the life ruining and the destruction of families and lives. But there's this nicer middle. And when I say nicer, it's in air quotes. Yeah. Because the most common thing that happens in Mormonism when you leave the church isn't that you get excommunicated.
Right.
It's that you become a disappointment to your parents, to your siblings, to your children for the rest of your life. And so you could cure cancer, you could win the Nobel Peace Prize, and your mother would always look at you as a disappointment, as someone who failed them, as someone who broke the eternal chain, who disappointed the family. And there's nothing you could ever do, doesn't matter how happy you are, how healthy you are, how great your marriage is, how great your kids become.
And what a better person you are. Like,
it doesn't matter.
You're not
it
running around
matter.
Being a bigot, racist.
Yeah. So it's not as that middle yeah. ground is yeah. not as insidious as excommunication sure. or smearing.
Yeah, but living just with shame. But John, living with shame is pretty abusive.
What does it do to be a lifetime yes. disappointment to your yeah. parents?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a
reality for everyone. Almost yeah. everyone who leaves the Mormon church is an eternal disappointment to their family.
No, agreed. Agreed. Yeah. Well, so John,
and that's abusive. That's abusive.
Of course,
yeah,
I mean, to do it to your children, to shun them, to make them live a life where they're shaming themselves, where they feel they have no hope, then they're lost. I mean, I could never imagine doing that right. today. I mean, I could have imagined it, right? In Scientology, literally, you know, the disconnection letters from parents to children, that you can see this online, you guys. But literally the words are, you know, hopefully I'll see you next lifetime.
Right.
Hopefully you'll get yep. yourself, you'll get yourself handled. See you next lifetime.
Right.
To think that I thought that way, that right. that I wasn't actually my daughter's mother. Right. I was just, you know, she was my mother another lifetime, my husband another, like that's what Scientology teaches. Right. You'll just see them in another lifetime and she'll probably be your mother. It's no big deal.
Right.
There's no real value. There's no value put on family. Everything is similar to the Mormon church, where everything is a church, right?
Yep.
Like you were teaching class before you went to your regular job.
Yep.
Yeah. You were,
yeah, every morning waking right. up at 5
yes.
so I could teach at 6.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then putting in a regular work day and being a father and being a husband. Like this is... Yes.
Being Mormon takes 10% of your income and 10 yes. to 20 hours a week for your life. That's a fact.
Oh, well, we were, yes, exactly. And same, you know, we were 12 and a half hours a day minimum as a parishioner.
A week,
12 yes.
and a half hours
oh,
a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, 12 and a half hours a week minimum.
Yeah, Sea Org is a whole nother level, obviously.
No, that's a whole, yeah. now that, yeah. that's yeah. that's basically 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
7 days a week. No vacations, no weekends yeah. off, no none of that. None of that.
Yeah, that's a whole other level.
$50 a week for your eternity. What you're getting yeah. in return is your eternity, right, Mike? You got your
yeah.
what you forfeited.
Something I think we have in common is there's really no way to be a middle road Mormon. You're either sort of Orthodox or you're out. Our church is just now, because of, you know, our podcasts and social media stuff, the Mormon church is just now starting to carve out, just to get the idea that there's a possible way to be a liberal or progressive Mormon.
Yes.
But historically, you're either all in or you're all out.
Yeah, no, that's, Scientology is an extremist religion. There's no, like, kind of, you know, sort of Scientologist. Yeah. Like,
Mormonism historically has been the same way.
Right. Yeah. So, John, and moving forward, what do you think the best way to end the abuses? What can people do? I mean, people who are listening to this, who are not Mormons, who are not, what can people do to stop this control, the damage that cults do and can do, and are doing today? This is not something that's like, you know, we're talking about something that was in the past with Scientology, the Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, even the way people think nowadays, you see something on Twitter and people retweet it. Like, I'm like, did you do any fucking investigation before you retweeted that shit? Like, look, it's becoming a thing where we just kind of, I'm now doing more research on, like, how did I become that way, right? Like, well, I was raised in it, but how do you stay in it? And then how are people continuing to just kind of believe what's put in front of them?
I just want to say that you guys, I want to say, Leah, you, Mike, the ex-Scientologists have been deeply impactful to the Mormon community.
In
whether
what
way? It's the Going Clear documentary was huge.
Because they saw similarities and they...
Oh, it's no. Oh, you know, if it's your own religion, you're defensive.
Right.
You know, you won't watch it. You're warned against it.
Yes.
But if you're watching Going Clear, if you're watching, you know, Lee and Mike, your series on TV that was so amazing, all of a sudden you feel safe enough to, like, laugh at other cults and to point out how harmful or ridiculous they are. That's kind of a Trojan horse into your subconscious to allow you to start thinking about how that might apply to your own. And so Mormonism would be, you know, we look, ex-Mormons kind of admire Scientology in the sense that they have a Leah Remini. You know, Maria Osmond or Donny Osmond haven't defected. You know, Steve Young, the NFL quarterback, has not left the church yet. You know, Mormonism would be so lucky to have a super high profile defection from the church, because that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You guys have moved the needle, not just for your own faith, but for so many other high demand religions. And so I just want to say, in some ways, we need to be more like you. I hope that more high profile Mormons have the courage to speak out. We're not there yet. But it starts there. And I just want to honor you guys for what you've done for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. It's funny that you bring up Marie Osmond, because I've met Marie. She's like one of the loveliest people you're ever going to meet.
Super lovely.
And you even said this, right? Mormons are considered nice people, right? So it would really make me uncomfortable, like, to have to sit with, like, a Marie Osmond and go, but Marie. How do you subscribe? Marie, do you agree that and pick out these things? It would, I gotta tell you, I'd be uncomfortable, wouldn't you, Mike?
Absolutely. This is John's point about the nice part of this is in some ways more difficult to deal with than the crazy.
Right. Yeah. Now, John, would you agree that, like, so you tell me, could it be that Marie doesn't subscribe to the things that we're talking about that are problematic, that she's not teaching her children?
Marie's been public in admitting that she has had LGBT, at least one, if not multiple LGBTQ children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so a bunch of us are scratching our heads like, wow, our church can be deadly to gay and lesbian and transgender people. Mm-hmm. And yet Marie Osmond is a full on spokesperson, and she's got her own kid that isn't literally welcome, you know, in so many ways in the church. And the church is deadly for people like at least one or two of her own children. And so, I mean, it's just complicated. And
Because there's no room. See, like, Marie, if Marie is allowed to, or, you know, Mormons are allowed to say, I agree with this, but I don't agree with this, right? I'm going to, and be open about it, John, like literally talking to their bishop saying that, you know, my daughter's gay, my son's, so I don't subscribe to that. I'm not going to be teaching that to my child. And I don't subscribe to it. I don't condone it. But in Scientology, you're not allowed to do that.
So if you're a celebrity in Mormonism, you can actually believe whatever you want, and you can actually tell your local leader, you still drink beer, or you may not be sexually pure, or you may not believe in the LGBT policy, as long as you're quiet about it publicly. The place you cross the line in Mormonism is if you ever publicly criticize the church leaders or you publicly disagree with church doctrine, then you face punishment. But even then, the church is these days not wanting a public scandal. And so we have instances of like Tyler Glenn. He was the lead singer of this group called Neon Trees. He's gay. He eventually left the church. He doesn't believe the church is true. But the church didn't go after him when he publicly spoke out against the church because they didn't want a scandal.
Right.
But again, if you think about Steve Young or Donnie Marie Osmond, it's not always the church that they fear. It's disappointing grandma, disappointing brothers and sisters, disappointing their children. It's coming back to Utah and holding your head low as everybody looks at you like a traitor. And yes, there are absolutely a mountain of Mormons that no longer believe in the church's truth claims, who disagree with fundamental church teachings, but are terrified to speak publicly about it. Not because the church will punish them, because the church is getting smart.
Their community will.
But because their community will stop buying their records, stop buying their books, look at them in sad ways, no longer invite them to the parties, and they'll be soft shunned in the community.
Yeah.
And who wants that, right? Who wants
that? Nobody. Yeah.
Well, what's the upside? What's the upside?
Right. It makes sense. But
the rest of the world knows the Mormon church is weird. So you're just going to be telling the rest of the world what they already know, and then you're going to be viewed as an enemy within the gates of your own city. Does that make sense?
Wow.
Complete.
Yes, totally.
Complete.
What do you think the best way of approaching, or how do we go about ending these abuses? What do you see from your perspective, John?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't jump into that a little bit more directly, but I think we have a lot to teach each other. So, for example, we've never had a Going Clear documentary. We've never had a series on a major cable network. We would love to learn how to do something like that. That would be amazing. Maybe Scientologists have never had, Reddit groups or podcasts or YouTube channels at the level that ex-Mormons have. And so the extent to, and by the way, I've met Chris Shelton. I've had him on Mormon Stories. I've had several Jehovah's Witnesses on. I think cross-pollination of not only programming, but also of teaching each other tools and tips and techniques and supporting each other. You know, Leah and Mike, when you guys cover Jehovah's Witnesses on your TV show, that was huge for the Jehovah's Witness community. And so I would say number one is cross-pollination of content and cross-pollination of tips and tricks and ideas. I help you guys with camera or lighting. I help you guys with formats for podcasting, more podcasts. You know, there are ways that we can cross-pollinate. That's one thing, because there's so much power in the masses, in the grassroots.
Agreed.
And so a second thing I want to say, Mike, is what we've done is, my goal isn't to change the Mormon church. That's not my goal. My goal is to reach as many Orthodox Mormons as possible, to teach them the truth and the facts about their church, to teach them about the harm that the church causes, and then to support them as they transition, if they choose to transition away from Mormon Orthodoxy, to support them in the transition. And so grassroots for us has been the way to go. And so, for example, Mormon Stories podcast defies all sort of podcasting standards. I have 12-hour episodes sometimes. I have five, six, seven, and we do long form. So I'll take a Mormon. Let's just say it's a lesbian Mormon or a gay Mormon or a former bishop that left the church. I will sit with them and let them tell their story for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. And it's just them telling the story. It's not me ranting. It's not me sort of doing a Rush Limbaugh or a Glenn Beck trying to like shove my ideology down people's throats. I let people just tell their own stories, cry, to emote, give them as much time as they need. And it turns out that that's highly effective in changing the hearts and minds of an Orthodox believing Mormon, because it's real. It's someone's story. How do you argue with someone's story? And it's right. Emotional. It grabs their heartstrings.
Sure.
And so there are techniques that we're using to help approach things at the grass level. And by the way, the tail wags the dog. When the church starts experiencing mass defections and super bad press, then the leaders of the Mormon church really wake up and pay attention. Or when tithing donations start dropping severely, then the church really wakes up. And so, you know, that this is just a strategy that we've developed as Mormons. Let's cross-pollinate. Let's partner with you guys. Yeah. You guys share with us, we share with you like you're doing today. I think, you know, if we had, okay, here's an idea. Mike and Leah, what if every year we had an international conference for ex-cult members or for ex-religionists? And we had keynotes, we had keynote speakers, we invited the podcasters and the Reddit people and the YouTubers, we invited psychologists and mental health professionals, authors and experts, and we had like an ex-religion con, you know?
Yes, would love it.
Why don't we organize that?
Yeah, and then, love it,
and then,
great.
Yeah, and then we're learning, we're teaching each other, we're learning from each other, we're developing projects together.
Yes.
And I mean, just think about it. Like, one of the reasons why you guys should be concerned about the Mormon church is because we've got so much money. Our lawyers are the ones that are going in front of Congress and fighting for religious freedom. And guess what happens when the Mormon church backs and supports and strengthens what it calls religious freedom, which in Mormonism we all know is a code word for we want to keep discriminating against marginalized groups within our church,
right.
but the government doesn't want to let us discriminate, so we're going to hide behind the call of religious freedom.
Yes.
That'll protect our tax-exempt status.
Yes.
And allow us to kick LGBT kids out of BYU or whatever it is, or protect.
Yes.
Our money and not have to be transparent in our finances. So, but what if all of the ex-religion groups band together to start challenging tax-exempt status of abusive religious organizations? I hear you guys on your podcast. I just like, is anybody listening?
Yes.
Why does Congress not care?
Yes.
About these abuses? Maybe instead of us speaking in silos, we need to start speaking as a united group. And maybe there's strength in numbers. Mike, I think that would be my best answer to your question.
Terrific. Terrific.
And John, I don't disagree with you. And I think, you know, we should have another conversation about this, because I agree with you. I think, you know, Mike and I were very interested in doing, you know, first of all, like, we had to fight to get that Jehovah's Witness episode. We had to basically negotiate to take a Scientology episode out of the season to put in a Jehovah's, because we were getting an overwhelming amount of requests. I had to fight for it. And we were going to do the same for the requests that we got about the Mormon church.
Yeah. And I don't want to minimize, and I sound like a broken record. We can't minimize the time, the years,
yes,
and the money taken,
exactly,
from people,
yes,
under false pretenses.
Exactly.
That is abusive, even if it's not putting people in prison
and,
or
and
or
we have always said
them.
That. Why? Yeah. Scientology doesn't say, look, we're a business for profit. These are our beliefs. You know, like, to hide your own beliefs.
Yeah.
To lie to the public, to say, we don't believe in this volcano theory. That is the confidant. Just say it. Allow people to decide for themselves.
Absolutely.
That we
Absolutely,
believe in body thetans, that, you know, which are spirits, you know,
right,
that were made. These are the confidential teachings that will cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Let people decide if
Absolutely,
they want to do that.
And we've got our own. We've got our own secret rituals and our own secret teachings.
Right, and just let people decide. Yeah. Be transparent. Stand
Absolutely,
behind what you believe.
Yep, Absolutely. Anyway. Amen.
Yeah,
amen.
Let's talk. Amen.
Amen, Sister Leah. Amen.
Amen, brother. All right. I want to talk to you about, in closing, because you have a private coaching practice and you focus on religion and mental health. What is that?
Well, you know, once I started the podcast, it was as if I had popped a huge, massive balloon of Mormon yes. pain in the sky.
Yes.
And I literally had people flying from all over the world to come to my house to have lunch with me because there was nowhere in Mormonism to get support for being gay in a mixed faith marriage, you know, not believing, but not being able to talk about it, yeah. all the other problems. And so I realized that I had no skills as a technology guy to really be able to help people. So I took 6 years to pursue a clinical and counseling psychology PhD yeah. so that I could make sure that when I counseled people, I could give them the best advice as possible. So I got that 6 years ago. And what I started doing is I started counseling people one-on-one, counseling couples in distressed marriages. And I started holding workshops and retreats for people who were, you know, losing their faith in Mormonism and trying to leave it and trying to rebuild a new life. So mm-hmm. over the past several years, I've held dozens and dozens of workshops, retreats, and I've counseled hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to support them in their journey sort of out of Orthodox Mormonism. Sometimes it's to keep their marriage from blowing up. Sometimes it's to keep an LGBT kid from ending their life. And then sometimes it's to just help a couple that's no longer Mormon not totally screw up their lives, because there are a lot of ex-Mormons that wreck their lives. It's like, oh, I've never tried alcohol before. Yeah, now I'm going to drink all
right.
the time.
The
I've never
swing.
Tried drugs.
Right. Yes.
Now I'm going to try every
right.
drug.
Right.
I've only had sex with one person. Now I'm going to become a swinger and right. have sex with lots and lots of people. And yes. You could blow up your life this way if you're 40 or 50 and yes. you're just trying all this stuff for the first time.
And not to mention, John, sometimes when people do that, the pendulum swing, they feel so bad about themselves. They're like, well, look at me now outside of this controlled environment. I can't be trusted. I'm not a good person. I'm going back.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to go back in the Mormon church once you stop believing, but it definitely happens.
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
happens.
Yeah. So go ahead. Yeah. yeah. Now, yeah, what is the John? This is amazing. The fact that you're doing all of this—that you took 6 years to find a way to help people—is there a website? Can people donate? Can people support
yeah,
you?
Thank you for asking. So the website is MormonStories.org. You can click on the donate button at the top, and you know most of my listeners are monthly donors, and they just donate $10 a month or $50 a month, whatever they can afford. Yeah. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're transparent in our finances. 100% of what goes into the you know my podcast, my nonprofit, is spent supporting people in this transition, teaching the truth, waking people up, saving families, preventing divorce, preventing depression and anxiety and suicide. And so MormonStories.org is the place people can listen. We've got over 1,500 hours, podcast hours. Wow. So I have interviewed over 1,500 hours worth of podcast interviewees. So you can watch the podcast there. You can go to YouTube and watch our podcasts on YouTube. And yeah, you can donate at MormonStories.org. Thank you for asking.
Please. And we're going to post that link onto our website as well as Mike Rinder's blog. Because we definitely want to, like you're saying, we want to support and help people who've been through similar atrocities in their life, and they need support. And you know, Jan, we do the same thing that you do. I don't know on as big a scale as you do it, but
or bigger. How about bigger? How about your scale is bigger than mine?
No. Meaning we do the best we can. It's a very small group of people that are able to help the others coming out. Mike, and maybe you want to mention it, Mike, who started the Aftermath Foundation to help people who were trying to leave Scientology. But you know, again, it's a very small group. and we don't have resources because we don't have PhDs, right? And Mike and I are often just kind of listening, as you know, I call us grandma and grandpa. We just kind of listen as best we can. And because we've been in Scientology our whole lives, I was a parishioner my whole life, and achieved high levels in Scientology as a parishioner. And Mike was a well-established, high-ranking Sea Org member, they know that they don't have to explain everything to us. But we are finding, John, there are not a lot of therapists out there, because what you're dealing with in what we're talking about, you're talking about trauma, and not a lot of therapists are well-versed. They're well-versed in what they do, right? They went to school, they have PhDs, right? But for somebody to have to explain, let me explain what this is, what this piece of abuse is. Let me explain what this, you know, you're paying to educate the therapist. And we talked to Steve Hassan about this. There's not a whole lot of people who are well-versed in these religions and cults that are traumatizing to people. I mean, these things are traumatizing because you have to be a therapist well-versed in that religion or cult, as well as well-versed in trauma.
Right. Yeah. And that's another thing I'm really proud of is there are dozens of really competent progressive and ex-Mormon therapists and counselors and coaches. Yes. There's a Mormon Mental Health Association, which is a network of therapists and coaches that are competent in helping people leave.
And where
leave
is that,
church.
John?
Yeah, you could just Google Mormon Great. Mental Health Association. A dear friend of mine named Natasha Helfer Parker, she has an organization called Symmetry Solutions, and she's an expert in coaching and counseling people. My wife is a coach, Margie DeLynn. She has a website called beautyinthenow.org. There are many Mormon psychologists and mental health professionals, marriage and family therapists that are super competent. So look up Mormon Mental Health Association, Symmetry Solutions, me, Dr. John DeLynn. We can get you with really competent professionals.
If you could give all these links to Mike, your wife, and everybody you just mentioned, and we could post those as well, because, you know, we want to share this information with people. We don't have that for Scientologists. Right. And I hope this helps somebody who needed this, who needed to hear this. And John, thank you for all that you do. Thank you to your wife and to all those out there helping Mormons who were greatly affected by this and trying to put their lives together. And if you're thinking about leaving, there's resources out there for you. And I hope they link up with you, John. And thank you so much for being our guest. And we want to talk offline with you about what we were talking about. But to all of you out there, thank you for listening. Thank you to John. And until next time.
Thanks, Mike and Leanne. You guys have saved thousands of Mormon lives. So the thanks is very much mutual. Thank you so much for all you do. Please keep it going. We need you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As much as we could be there to know that we've helped anybody, thank you.
You guys take care. Stay safe.
Okay,
thank you.
Bless. Okay.
You too.